Finally, it's the long-awaited part two of my interview with Pomplamoose, on which Jack and Natalie share more of their success on YouTube, talk about how to acquire the mechanical licenses to sell cover songs, talk about some of the elements of their success, and they share some tough love for indie music naysayers. All that and more on this episode of Artist Empowerment Radio. Welcome to episode 63 of the podcast. Appreciate you listening. If there's one word to sum up my feelings about Artist Empowerment Radio at this particular moment, it would be backlog. That's right. It's taken me forever to get out this part two of the Pomplamoose interview. In addition to that, I've got a backlog of interviews that I've done for my music marketing mentorship program, and I like to take excerpts from those interviews and put them on the public podcast here, and I have a bunch to share. I'm just going to have to get out as time allows. I also, over the summer, Pookie and I went to Hawaii, and I recorded a couple of stroll casts, a couple of inspiring, I hope, messages that I want to share with you. So it's my intention to crank out these things more often between now and the end of the year to get a little bit caught up and get more of this good information into your ears. So no promises, because, you know, life happens. I've been busy doing a series of workshops on the road. Also recently put out a new resource called the Music Publicity Insider's Guide, which I released in sort of a beta early release format to people on my mailing list. And so hopefully in the coming weeks, you should see that on the public site when I re-release that to the music masses. So lots going on, but this is a great interview with Pomplamoose. A lot of people enjoyed the first half of it and have been asking me when the second half is available, and it is right now. So let's get right to it. My interview with Jack Conti and Natalie Dawn of the YouTube sensation and indie music success story known as Pomplamoose. Here it is.
So you've been featured in a couple of car commercials, Hyundai and Toyota, I guess, over the past year. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Those are cool. So those are obviously your opportunities that came to you as a result of the level of exposure that you got on YouTube.
Exactly.
Yeah, those were fun little emails that we got in our inbox. That
yeah.
Were just, you know, hey, you want to be on TV? So it was kind of fun.
And then you put that little logo on all your stuff, as seen on TV, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy.
After
exactly.
that. So the NPR thing, which I now know was over a year ago, you were talking about how you make a living doing this. And I think it's been quoted in different places, like 100,000 songs a year. I guess, is that still an accurate figure for the last couple of years? The average number of downloads that you sell?
Yeah, that's what it was for 2009. In 2010, it was more than that because we had, we just had more exposure. I think we released this covers album in 2010, and then we had the Hyundai gigs as well. So we ended up selling more than that. But yeah, you know, it's somewhere around there. We're not a platinum band.
Right. But that just goes to show you can have modest, I mean, that's modest sales, I guess, for major label standards, but you're able to make a living doing it as an indie act. And I think that, I'm always stressing how it's not a black and white, you're not a huge hit or you're living in obscurity. There's a lot of gray areas these days, and you have found a sweet spot in that.
Yeah, somebody said something that rang true with me. I think it was at a show. There was a fan who came up to me afterwards and said, so he said, what do you think of this new era of demi-celebrities? And it just hit me so hard because often people will be like, you know, we'll be talking with someone, they'll say, so like, you guys are famous or something, are you? And like, you know, we're not famous. We're not famous
yeah.
like people think of the word famous. But then you have to admit that we are at some level at this point, sort of public-ish figures because, you know, we appear on blogs. A lot of folks in San Francisco have heard of us. A lot of folks around the world have heard of us. We get recognized on the street. You know, sometimes we're eating a meal at a restaurant. People come up to us and ask us to take a picture. You know, So we do have some level of that, but it really is, I think the appropriate word to describe it is demi-celebrity. And it's, yeah, what's happened is, the way I like to phrase it is, you know, it used to be that all of the fortune and fame, if you will, was in the hands of the few. There were 20 great acts that everybody knew and listened to, or maybe even fewer at any given time. And now, and they had all of the money and all of the CD sales and all of the recognition and everything. And now it's, that has been diffused into the hands of the many. And now it's thousands and thousands of demi-celebrity bands who are not famous, and not platinum artists and not making, you know, a rich living, but they're making a living and happy and making the art that they like, and no one's sticking their toes in their creative pies. And they don't have to worry about money, and they don't have to worry about label executives dropping them. And I think it's a great new world. It's a great transition. It's a great diffusion of fortune and fame, I suppose. And one that I would rather have than being sort of this like major label kind of situation. Cause there's a lot of negatives that go along with that kind of exposure as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're saying that, cause I tend to be an eternal optimist myself. And so I've, you know, often preach about how it's, you know, this is the best era to be alive in, to be an artist or creating music. But then there's a lot of cynics out there who go, oh, this, you know, the DIY directed fan model's a lie. I don't know anybody who's making a living, and you know, they just look at what's wrong with it. Tell me about that, Jack.
They need to be quiet.
They just need to stop talking. It's documented in too many cases. Just go to YouTube. There's recently I went to YouTube. I got linked to a couple channels who linked me to about 20 new channels who are doing exactly what we're doing, except better. They have all of their shit together. They've got their websites, their downloads. They've got email lists.
More pop.
It's super pop sounding. It sounds like mainstream pop music.
Yeah.
But that, because of that, they have triple or quadruple the amount of subscriptions and
like a third the amount of time that we've, I mean, they just, I don't know.
Yeah, they rose up
young,
YouTube really quickly. Yeah, they're like 18 years old.
It's just ridiculous.
And there's dozens of them now. And I guarantee you they're all making a killing on single sales and album sales. And they're going to get all kinds of licensing deals coming up in the next couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
These kids are going to be huge. They're this new wave of indie artists. And they're 18 years old. Some of them even younger. There's this one girl who's 16 who's got 2 to 3 million views on every single one of her videos that comes out. And it's just her sitting in front of a keyboard playing and singing. But she does one or two a week. And then there's more. There's people who are doing full-blown production videos like we're doing, and they're getting millions and millions of views
on originals
and covers, and they're so anyway, those people just need to, they simply have the facts incorrect. There are too many people making a living as independent musicians right now.
What I will say though is that it's true that if you are looking for Lady Gaga level of success, you can't do that as an independent artist. That is still just sort of exclusive territory that still belongs to the labels, because the labels still guard top 40s radio.
Yeah.
And other reasons too. But
you need to partner with a company that has, I guess, an infrastructure to handle that level of activity, I guess.
No, I think you would need to have like a 360 deal with a label at this point. I still think that there is no company that is as good at, you know, making a star as a label.
Mm-hmm.
But for all the people who aren't interested in being a star and who just want to make a good living making the music that they want to make, you absolutely don't have to go through a label.
Yeah.
That is all. And actually, there's a quote from that NPR thing a year ago, Natalie, where you were quoted. I just love this. because she was talking about, I guess the gal was that the correspondent that interviewed you, but she was asking, how do you get this stuff done and how do you license these songs and all that? And you told her, well, you go to Harry Fox and you know, it's really easy. But you're quoted here saying people think that all these things have to be done by geniuses behind huge desks at the top of skyscrapers, but you can just go online and do it yourself. Isn't it a lot easier than people make it out to be?
Oh, yeah.
Relatively so. I mean, there's work involved and a learning curve, but still, it's doable, right, for most people.
I mean, yeah. Well, if you have drive and if you're creative and if you want to make a living as an artist, it is totally possible. And there are a lot of things that the music industry wants you to believe is, you know, exclusive, that they still hold the keys to. But those things are very limited at this point. They don't actually hold the keys to that many things, like licenses, for example. It's so easy to go online to Harry Fox. If you have a song that you want to sell online, you just pay $100 and you get to sell 1,000 songs. So, you know, it's really simple.
Yeah.
Cool. And I can I just ask maybe one or two more technical questions here?
Of course.
Just have a couple of minutes. Just let me know if I'm pushing it too far with the time. But of those, of the 100,000, do you have a breakdown of like singles versus albums? I'm just one. I'm wondering if do you happen to know what those figures are in sales?
No, I don't know. I do not know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what they are.
We also just don't like telling people.
If I knew, though, I would tell you. I honestly don't have any clue.
Because my instinct is that, yeah, when a band has, it's an indie band and has more of a kind of a hardcore or cult following or whatever, would tend to do better, you know, slightly higher album sales than maybe a pop artist with a one-hit, you know, thing. But I just wanted to, if that played out for you guys. But I was also fascinated to hear, do you still not have any physical album products? They're all downloads for the most part?
So, yeah, we don't have any physical CDs.
Yeah, we think we're gonna, because we have an upcoming tour here in June. At the end of June, we're gonna be doing a very short East Coast tour, just 4 shows, but we're gonna be playing at the Kennedy Center with OK Go. We're trying to get merch together, and physical albums are pretty useful when you're touring. We just haven't done many live shows, so we really haven't had a use for them. We're going to be printing some albums pretty soon here.
Great. Yeah, it's good to have those, enhanced packages of physical. People, I guess, will pay a little bit more for physical products, especially if you can sign them and package other things with them and all that, and T-shirts. But I know, this tour is rare because you don't do a whole lot of live performance, right?
No, we don't. We've played like three public shows at this point.
Because I get that question a lot. Like almost every week somebody's emailing me and going, is it possible for an artist that doesn't perform live much to really make a go at this? And I guess you're an example that, yes, it is. It's probably a little tougher, I would imagine. Would you say?
No.
Way easier for us.
It's a lot.
I think to try to make a living playing live shows for us starting from the beginning would have been impossible.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Most artists lose money when they go on tour.
Small artists.
Yeah, most small artists lose money when they go on tour. Most artists are small artists.
This is true. If you're a classic rock band, I guess you can make money when you go on tour or something.
There's a clear distinction here. If somebody owns most of your recordings, in other words, if you're still recouping an advance that you get from a label, you don't make any money through recordings because most bands these days don't go platinum. And you have to sell, depending on your deal, you know, upwards of 800,000 albums before you start seeing any royalty checks for your record sales. And at that point, they're minuscule royalty checks. I mean, you're still not making very much on the sale of masters. Okay. But so in that sense, then, bands who go on tour They say, of course we make our money playing live because we don't make any money from recordings. And we're precisely the opposite. We don't have this enormous following that a major label band would have. So when we go on tour, instead of having 5,000 people at a show, maybe we have 400 people at a show. So we don't make as much money on tour. However, we own 100% of our recordings. So we don't have to recoup any advance. We start seeing checks the minute our songs go up online, and we don't have to pay anybody the majority of those checks. So you know, it just depends on whether or not you have a typical
record deal.
Yeah. And that's really the distinction between can you do it live or can you do it recorded.
Very cool. And I think, I see you quoted somewhere that you might have a tough time reproducing maybe your recordings in a live setting or something.
Yeah, we need like 30 people. Yeah, because we have a lot of layers.
So I know you have a lot of your songs are available through iTunes and Amazon and the regular sources, but I also noticed on your site people can order through eJunkie, which is a shopping cart that I recommend. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience using that, which I guess you run that yourself, right?
Yeah,
we do. It is a great way for you to sell your stuff on your MySpace or your website or whatever it is. It's an easy to use program that, you know, is subscription based, and so it doesn't take
a percentage.
Of
you pay a small monthly fee. And then they provide you link release options upon purchase through a shopping cart. So they give you a button. You upload products to their server. And then when somebody clicks the button, it makes them pay. And then it releases a link to the product that you've uploaded. And you can sell anything, any digital good you can sell. Actually, you can sell physical goods, too. But then you need an order fulfillment, workflow.
It delivers the download link or the
mm-hmm.
it's all automated, so you don't have to sit there and manually mail.
Exactly.
Them. Right.
Yeah, the second people. Somebody pays, it releases a download link, a unique download link.
Yeah. And so that's something that a lot of artists should know. I mean, there are probably people use, the different shopping carts, but they have knowing about eJunkie and connecting it to PayPal or Google Checkout or one of those is a way that some people probably just don't know about. And I noticed one of your first choices on your little eJunkie order form is the top with, like, you can get everything for, is it like $99 or something? You could, like, is that everything? You can get all things Pumpkin
yeah, I think it's
related?
Far less than that. But yeah, I think it's like $20 or $25 you can
okay.
get our whole catalog.
That's right. It is only. I'm inflating your prices already, but that's cool. Do you have many people
going
for that?
You want to pay $99.
Yeah, actually, I think probably the majority of our eJunkie sales, I think, are everything button downloads.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
that goes to show you people aren't just looking for freebies, and that you're obviously buying things in quantities. Even without a mailing list,
and people care too. Where you get the most money from? You know, because iTunes takes 30% of your sale, and so when you go through eJunkie, you're making more money. And people will email us and say, "Hey, how does the artist get the most money? Like, what's the best way for me to buy your music so that you get it?" And it's definitely eJunkie for us.
Very, very, very cool. Well, I really appreciate the time. I know we've gone a little over the original allotment here, but I appreciate that. This has been great. So where can I'd like to end my interviews by asking where can people find you, or where would you like them to go online to find about not only Pomplamoose, but we would have a chance to talk about you each have your solo projects too. But give me some addresses where people can go.
Yeah, YouTube is the best place to find us for all of our music. Pomplamoose Music is our Pomplamoose page, so youtube.com/pomplamoosemusic. Jack's page is youtube.com/jackcontymusic, and mine is youtube.com/nataliedon.
And Natalie, did you spell it N-A-T-A-L-Y?
A-L-Y.
Dawn,
that's right.
And Pomplamoose is P-O-M-P-L-A. And then moose. and is it not, is it supposed to be a derivative of some French word that stands for grapefruit? That's what everybody's, that's what's on Wikipedia.
It is,
anyway.
It is. It's a sort of Americanized pronunciation of the French word for grapefruit.
Fantastic. I won't ask where that came from, but it seems to be working for
Not
you.
Not that interesting.
Yes. So, all right, great. Thank you so much for your time. It's a thrill to know that I was part of your life, Jack, back in your formative years through my
Way
book.
Back.
It's great to connect here, and continued success. And I hope to run into you down the road.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Bob.
You.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. So long for now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it. There you have it. There you go. I hope you enjoyed that interview. It was a good one. I certainly enjoyed doing it and even enjoyed listening back to it myself. If you're a musician and you want to get more free tips and tools delivered to you 3 or 4 times a month, I encourage you to subscribe to my long-running Buzz Factor e-zine. It's free. Just go to thebuzzfactor.com and sign up if you don't already get that. And like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm hoping to get caught up on this backlog of podcast episodes. So hopefully if you subscribe through iTunes or whatever you do, you'll be seeing more of these downloaded into your system. And you can load them up on your iPod or iPad or whatever it is that you load them onto. However you listen to them, I hope that you do. I appreciate it. Thanks once again. I'll hope to be back real soon. This is Bob Baker saying so long for now, and thanks again for listening to Artist Empowerment Radio. Right.